You are listening to the Improv Save My Life podcast, brought to you on Bits, the Boston Improv Talk Station.
All right, welcome to episode 85 of the Improv Save My Life podcast. I'm your host, Tom Boyer. This podcast is brought to you on Bits, the Boston Improv Talk Station. Two guests this week, our first married couple on the podcast.
Yeah! Breaking new ground.
We have Claire and Bobby Smithney. What's going on, guys?
Hey.
Not much. Doing all right.
Yeah.
Excited to be here.
Claire is a co-producer of Studio 40 at Improv Boston with Mike Cox. A new run just recently started.
Yes. Yep.
With a bunch of new teams, right?
Yeah.
I went to like the first night where it was like a mixer type thing.
Yeah, it was a bunch of people.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
I liked all of them. Well, I don't know what the new teams were necessarily, but I liked all the teams pretty much.
Yeah, we're very happy with them.
You were also a former cast member of The Family Show and a Herald team at Improv Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And a member of Disco Basement, which is an indie improv team. And we also have Bobby here.
Yeah.
Bobby is a current main stage cast member.
That's me. A lot of former titles. Like, I used to do this, and I used to do this, I used to do this, and then I now am just performing, which is great.
Are you... I think I saw a post, and I might be incorrect. You're coming back to the main stage? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
He was the director.
I was the director for a couple years, and I loved it. And I think every time I was directing, every week I'd be like, hey, you guys are great. Here's your notes. God, I miss performing. and now I get to do that again, so I'm very excited.
I bet. I've never really directed anything, but directing and just watching, I think I'd get antsy to want to get in there.
You should do it, honestly. It develops a level of understanding that, like, when you have to teach it, it's very different. You start to go, oh, now I have to explain to somebody else why you should do this on stage. You know, it really does open different doors.
Yeah.
My friend Laura just made one of the top shelf teams. I don't know what the team name is yet, but she said that they have a director performer on their team.
Oh, cool.
I think that's pretty unique.
Jeremiah?
Yeah, it is Jeremiah.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
He's on a very short list of people. I'd be like, oh, you're going to do fine with that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the player coaches in basketball and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's a conflict of interest. And if you can keep holding it on your head, you can manage to do both things. Some people can, but it's really rare that you can.
He can, though.
Both.
I mean,
Jeremiah's going to be great.
He's so
talented.
He's
awesome.
That's awesome. So, Claire, why don't we start with you?
Yeah.
Where are you from originally?
I am from New Jersey.
Nice.
I am one of the many people who moved up here to Boston from Jersey.
I was about to say that.
We're like cockroaches.
Escaping the armpit of America.
Are there a lot of Boston people in New Jersey?
Not that.
Oh, I hope so.
Not that I knew of.
I hope there's like secret Boston deposits of people all over the place. But
no, but I mean, a lot of the Jersey Shore people have a similar sound. Oh, I met him. I sang backup for Shania Twain.
No one can see his t-shirt.
So Tom has a Bruce Springsteen t-shirt on right now, and I met him backstage at a Shania Twain concert, and he's so nice. He's such a nice guy.
I've heard he's nice.
He really is. He took the time to talk to like some really nerdy high school girls. So
I want to get to your backstory, but this singing background for Shania Twain thing
cannot
go unaddressed.
So she did a tour when I was in high school where she contacted local school choirs to sing backup for this song she had, God Bless the Child. And so I forget what the name of the stadium was, because it was like a bank and then it was like different things over the course of the years, but I forget what it was at the time. But we went and we sang backup for this one song, and then we got backstage passes and we got to wander around. It was really neat.
How was she? Was she nice?
We really didn't get to meet her. I mean, she like turned around and she was like, hi guys, but she was doing so much warm-ups and
One thing about Shania Twain that always cracks me up, and I don't think it's anything to do with her really, they probably made her do this, but that song, Man, I Feel Like a Woman.
Oh, yeah.
So there's, like, in the local radio markets, like, there's a line that says, like, so... Oh, no, it's, you don't impress me much.
There's
a line that's, like, so you think you're Brad Pitt. Well, that don't impress me much. But in all the local radio markets, they would change it to whoever the like morning DJ was, and like for Kiss 108, it's Matt Siegel.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea.
So it'd be like, oh, so you're Matt Siegel. That's what it was, just so jarring.
Yeah.
Like the.
And if you're in town, you're like, who the hell is that
if
guy?
It's a blank slate for comedy, whatever you want in there.
And I think most radio DJs aren't really Brad Pitt, you know.
Nor would you know, because they're on the radio.
But, So, grew up in New Jersey.
Yes.
Were you always into comedy?
No, I was always into theater. So I did theater and music and stuff like that in high school. And I got into improv in college with a group called the Rude Mechanicals. And we were okay. We were a college improv troupe. It was fun. I have a friend actually who lives up here who was from that group. And we had a good time, but I never took it seriously. And then 8 years later, I met Bobby. And I had stopped performing completely because I had panic disorder, so I like couldn't get on stage, and there was like a whole messy time in my life when I couldn't be the person I wanted to be because of the panic attacks. And I met Bobby, and he like was like, "That's stupid. You should do what you want to do." And I started taking classes at IB. And
it's very persuasive, man. That's stupid. You should do this other thing that I like.
It's really supportive.
Yep.
Were you able to just push past it?
Yeah, it took a long time. Like so they started when I was a senior in college, so that was 2000, and it wasn't until I met you in 2007, 2008, when I really started working through it, and so I would
fell into a very supportive group of people as well. You know,
yeah,
get the right class, and they get them together.
Yeah.
Like, most of them are actually still in
Disco Basement. Like,
so
seriously, Disco Basement are a group of best humans that I've ever met, and I find that with improv generally.
I do too, yeah.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people just through doing the podcast, and
mm-hmm.
I have ties here, and some ties that I mean, and just indie shows. So I could really count on one hand, like, the amount of people I'd be like, I'll sit with that person.
Yeah.
but, like, if you take the general population of
yeah.
It's like a 50-50 ratio.
Now, anyone listening, who's the asshole?
Oh, man. We're not naming assholes.
No,
we're not.
No.
That's
no.
Not the function.
Because this is for
name.
Posterity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I fell into a good group. I had some really good instructors. Dave Marino was one of my teachers. I had Will Aguera. I had Zach Ward, one of his first classes. I had Bobby a couple times. Feel terrible, I'm forgetting. Oh, and Shannon Connolly. Shannon was really the one that I think made me fall in love with it as an individual, as opposed to someone who's just like, maybe I'll see my husband more if I do it.
He seems to spend all of his time here.
Yeah, but Shannon just like exudes the joy of improv. Like everything she does when she teaches, it's just like, oh my God, how can you not love this when this like bubbly, happy person is like going, love it. So yeah, I auditioned and I got into a Herald team and sort of made my way around the theater for a while.
Awesome. How did you get into producing Studio 40?
Yeah, so I was looking for something to sort of keep a foothold at IB after having our daughter Annie Jay. And I thought, you know, I couldn't commit 2 days a week for a rehearsal and a performance, but I thought producing would really fit. Like, I'm very organized. I'm one of those hyper, like, everything has an Excel spreadsheet, everything's color-coded.
We could just say too organized.
I'm not too organized. I am just right organized. I am just right organized, and everything runs without a hitch.
Oh.
So I thought when I saw that Danny Bellella was stepping down, I thought, you know, that could really work for me. And I talked to Mike Dakota about it, and he said, how would you feel about being a co-producer? And I said, that sounds even better, because then on nights that, like, we can't get a babysitter or whatever, eventually I found out it was Mike, and Mike can go, or I can go, and, you know, he has to balance his family and too, and so it's really been great. I really enjoyed it.
Mike's a great guy, too.
Yeah.
We're working on a project right now for our indie teams. That should be interesting.
He's so smart. He really, like, the thing I love about Mike Cox is that he loves this so much, and he's so smart about the marketing piece, and like he thinks everything through so carefully. Like, well, if we do this, this means this. And he's also really receptive to listening to things, and I love working with him. He's so great.
So this thing we're working on, we had sent like an email or two back and forth, just like pre-planning it. And then the third email came from him, and it was like it could be a press release, like you could put in the paper tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did you, it would have taken me all day to write this, and I wouldn't have done it as well. And this, like, it just came like 2 minutes after like another email.
He sends out weekly like newsletters to Studio 40 that are basically like, here's who's in the cast, and here's what's happening, and any special notes, and we have workshops coming up, and. I'm always like, I would have taken hours and agonized over every word, and he's so good at putting stuff like that together. Yeah.
Nice.
I've been talking about this a lot recently, that like in work, for whatever reason, just basic competence seems to be like an actual skill set. So, like, oh, wow, you show up on time and you do what needs to be done. Like, oh, you're amazing. I wish we had 10 of you. Shouldn't everybody do that?
No, it's more than basic.
Oh, no, I know. I didn't mean to be putting him down.
Yeah.
So.
Shit in my Cheerios,
buddy. That's me. Poop and Fruit Loops.
So, Bobby, where
are
you?
That's on the internet forever.
Your name's on that one.
Yeah, whatever.
Where are you from originally?
Oh, okay. So, depending on my mood, I will either say Northern Virginia or New Hampshire. So, my parents bounce back and forth all the time, every year. So, you know, depending on if I'm like, oh, I you're from Kentucky, I'm from Virginia, like, we're here in Boston, I'm from New Hampshire, you know, so I kind of play both cards, but I love the experience.
Cool. Are you from a big family?
No, it's just, yes, a very tall, very large and wide family, yes, but the actual family itself is not terribly big. It's just me and my brother, my sister, and my mom and dad.
Cool. Were you always into comedy growing up?
So the story I always tell with this is, like, sometimes you can see the fork in the road, and it's, like, really just very overt. Like, oh, there it is. That's I could have made that turn there. I'm a completely different human being. And in high school, I was just walking around the campus, and the coach of the football team came to a screeching halt in this pickup truck and literally ran up to me. I'm 6'6". And like, and many.
Yeah, nobody knows that.
Nobody knows that. And many pounds. And even, I was that size even at like 14. And he came up and was like, you, giant oaf, you will play football for me. And I said, oh, okay, I'm a dope. And I went and I got all the shoulder pads and the pants and the crazy, you know, like, the weird things that slide under the pants there. You get the whole shebang.
Obviously,
yeah, the things and the other things. And they didn't have a helmet big enough for my head.
His head is enormous.
Yeah. People listening at home, I have a giant head. The head that was too big for the football team. So the coach said, ah, he just was anything to get me on the team. It's like, ah, you practice without it for the next couple days and we'll special order one. Yeah. Your faces that you're making, I did not make that face. I'm a dope. And I went, oh, okay. And on day two, I cut my head open on a tackling sled, which was a terrible decision. And then there were many questions about why I was out there. And in a related story, I passed PE without doing anything the whole rest of my years there. No, I was fine. And I decided, oh, man, I'm going to go out for the play instead. And that was like, oh, there's my life. Over there.
No play injuries?
No play injuries. Although my best friend fell in the orchestra pit and broke his leg, which was very funny.
You've had some like theater-related injuries.
Yeah, you know, theater injuries aren't cool. You know, I always say, you know, stretch beforehand. It's like, how'd you get that black eye? Oh, I was pretending to be a giraffe and I fell. You know, like, you don't want that story. I had a guy, this is years ago in improv, his name is Eric Volkart, and a very nice guy, and he accidentally elbowed me in the eye, and my eye went bloodshot red, and I was like, oh no, and it was red for so long, it was red for like almost a year, and I started to go like, maybe this is just me now, maybe I'm that weird giant with that one red eye.
That's called a cycle.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I've taken to falling on occasion for an improv scene. Somebody said, like, hey, you're like a heavier guy. Try to be more physical. And
which, of course, means fall down more.
So I like, you know, I'll pick my moments. I don't do it just to do it, but I'm not trained at falling, so I was bracing myself with my hands, and then like the next day, like my wrists are hurting me.
I remember there was one family show, and it was right after they'd done something with the set at IB. So like at IB, they have this black backdrop thing, and it's made of plywood, and then there's a low ceiling. And it used to be that you could like climb up the structure and like stick your head over the top and, you know, sing a little song or whatever it was for the family show. And they'd done something and I didn't realize, and I climbed up and I got stuck because it was smaller, and I'm like in there, and I forget who, it might have been Holly and Nate, and I was like, I'm okay!
Things change.
I was like, boy, this is really tight up here. I didn't realize that at all. And I'm like trying to get down, and I forget who, maybe Dan Chapman, I forget who it was, but someone came behind me and was trying to get me down. I'm like, I'm fine. Yeah.
I feel like falling off stage is a pretty common occurrence, or people jumping down from the stage and injuring themselves. They just happened to Dave Grohl. And the Foo Fighters were supposed to play Fenway. I was planning on trying to get tickets to that. They're canceling all their like European tours.
Yeah.
But like,
it's tough when you're on stage. You've got, like, you've got so much energy, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna give it my all. I'm really gonna like.
It's the adrenaline.
Yeah,
right?
It is. It's the adrenaline.
You don't realize.
And you also
like,
don't realize
you've been stabbed, Jeff. Yeah. You've been stabbed because of the adrenaline. It's probably the same with it.
You don't realize how off-putting that is for an audience either, because they go, "Oh, that guy can't control himself." You know,
not
like,
the Foo Fighters audience. No, I think they were like, "That's amazing."
No,
so he went on to actually sing, finish the song he was singing. Then
the guy was holding his foot together, right? Like,
yeah. They took him away, and then the drummer ended up who sings as well, ended up finishing the concert, but I think he may have come back for the end. It's crazy. I actually have a lot of respect for Dave.
I love those
Dave
stories of injuries and then people keep going.
Yeah.
Like when Teddy Roosevelt ran for president again by the Bull Moose Party, he got shot. And before, like bleeding from his chest, shot. And he was like, well, I got to give a speech. And he ended it with, I got to go because I've been shot. He's still for like an hour.
Here's the thing to know about my husband,
oh,
is
great.
That he has a random fact for everything.
I like, it's part of the improv thing. It's like, oh, I can do anything.
I have a story about that.
I have a story about that. Yeah.
Nice.
It's not. You can tell.
Well, it's because you hear the same ones over and over. Like, there's a limited number of facts.
I know.
And you pull them out over and over. I love you.
You don't. You don't.
I do.
You don't. You wouldn't bring this up right now.
Oh.
This is for posterity.
Sorry. Posterity.
Yeah.
So you got into theater in high school?
Yeah, I got into theater in high school, and I just really liked it. It did, you know, kind of typical high school theater stuff, and really liked it. And, you know, I still did a lot of like, you know, director, I have the gist of my lines. And, oh, they love that. You know, like the very, very gay priest, you know, directing the show at the school was, oh, yeah, really down with me having a loose understanding of my part. But fortunately, that's smiled upon in improv, so it's great.
I've actually heard, and I think Amy Poehler writes about this in her book, that a lot of people that do theater and they get all laugh because they forget their line and then they kind of improvise.
Yes.
They're like, wow, that's a rush. And then they kind of get into improv from there.
She improvised something from The Wizard of Oz when
right.
she was a kid.
I think it had to do with that.
She was like, it was like, she was looking for Toto.
Yeah.
And Toto was right there. So she put Toto down and be like, Toto, where are you? And Toto's literally, she just put Toto down.
Those kind of moments are magic.
Yeah.
So I always say an audience can smell a rat. You know? Like if you thought of your line, if you thought of your sentence on stage and improv, even like 5 seconds before, like, oh, I'm going to deliver this, it'll be great. To the point where like they know it. Like it's not as funny as if you just make it up off the top of your head.
I watched a show recently, and I, being in improv, you can kind of pick up on these things. And I saw this person that I swear they had all these canned lines. They were going to get out regardless of whether it fit in the context or the
mm-hmm.
offer they got or anything. I was getting mad. I'm like, stop it.
One of my favorite games that Bobby does as a director is Panic Bird, where he pretty much just, like, keeps dinging a bell. It's like ding, but he just keeps doing it until you think, like, I am on the other side of where I thought I could ever be, and you're yelling things.
Yeah, I don't like the rule of three for dings. I like to ding until you can't think of anything, and then just ding you like 10 more times. And just see, like, where's the basement of this house? Let's go all the way down.
Just yelling out, Kiwi!
Yep.
Bank of America.
I'm terrible at dings. I'm really impressed by like Comedy Sports and Face Off. Just how quickly they can come up. I think I come up with like clever offers and clever ideas and stuff, but I'm not particularly fast when I have to think on the spot. And then I always overthink everything instead of just saying whatever comes to mind.
It's funny. I feel like people in the Boston scene don't appreciate short form as much, but there really is an art to short form, and it's so hard. And, you know, I felt the same way going into Family Show. I was like, oh, I don't know how I'll feel about the games, but the games were so much harder than the open scene work because you had to be clever, you had to follow the rules, you had to break the rules in a smart way, and they just really tested me more than anything. And I love, actually, a couple of the groups that we just cast in Studio 40 are doing more free-form elements. Mudhut does some short-form games. Shuffleball Change does some short-form. And the two Mike Morrell teams, the Morrell joints.
Yeah.
Ghost Logic and, oh my God, Green Means Go are both trying out different elements of that style, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I had not really seen a lot of short-form other than, like, Whose Line, which I always liked, you know, before I got into improv. And I feel like that gets a lot of negativity from people in the community, and I don't know why.
I haven't heard any of that. I haven't heard
feel like it's like someone who does a really tough play, like one of those like really like long epic Angels in America style play. That's how they look at a Gershwin show or something, where they're like, that's not art.
Right.
You're like, well, talk to the person who learned the choreography and how hard they worked to train. And it's like, it was art in its own time, and it's art now
styles.
In a different way. And
just
it's more commercial.
Styles.
I mean, it is. Like, it's definitely more accessible to it.
Yeah, but like Wayne Brady is an amazing improviser.
Oh,
you know, like, they all are. You know, they're some of the best improvisers in the world.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you think, oh, well, you know, what are they doing? It's not impressive. No, like, freaking Ryan Stiles has done the same game 1,000 times, and he, like, not even 10,000 times, and he's still finding ways, different ways to make you laugh.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Him and Colin Mockery go on tour.
They're so good.
So at what point did you get into improv?
Keeping the rudder on the ship. In college, I went to BC, and actually, I tried to join up, actually, with my mother's Fleabag at the time, and they were like, we're only looking for girls. So they had just, like, lost Amy Poehler and everybody else. Which is fine, but because of my gender, I was excluded. And I joined up with another improv group that I loved. It was a CCE, and a bunch of, we did, like, an improvised murder mystery in an old mansion on campus. It was awesome. It was a blast.
Haunted old mansion.
It was indeed. I have one ghost story. If you nod, I'll tell.
Let's hear it.
So I'm, first of all, let me preface this by saying I'm a completely illogical weirdo, and I'm a militant atheist with a ghost story. So, you know, explain that, in my brain, how you make those things work together. But, so this old mansion, I was on campus, and it was like, you know, the whole area around it was donated to the school with the mansion as well. So all these other, you know, regular dormitories stuff are around this whole thing. It's called O'Connell House on BC. And, it's a huge, really, like you was once grand. And they had when you open the front doors, you come into this room, and it's a full-on, like, grand, almost ballroom. The big staircase going up to a second level that all looks down this big room, and it's like atriums and all those things. And it was really a cool space to do like a murder mystery kind of thing. It was always comedic. It was fun, but it was this thing we did. So one night I was the director, and we just finished a show, and we had a great thing. And I should also say that people lived in O'Connell House as well. Like, a couple of people lived there, and they had their own kitchen, and there was their job to kind of take care of it. And I was like, all right, everybody go home. I'm going to put the lights away. So I was going up to the second floor, and I was, you know, reaching over to get the lights and putting stuff away. And I slip. I let go with my hand, and I realize I'm going over this railing. And I had enough time where I was like, all right, it's like 20 feet. Your brain was already like, you're going to be hurt, but you're going to live through this. Relax. you know, go limp, dummy. And I feel just like very clearly like a hand on my back. Just enough for me to right my balance, grab me and pull me up just a little bit. And I turn around, I can feel it like it was yesterday. I turn around to thank who I think, oh, someone's walking by in the middle of the night, and I turn around, nobody's there. So I'm like, thank you, good night. And I ran out of the house, left all the lights up for the next day, whatever. But, yeah.
Bizarre.
Very bizarre, again. And, you know, there is no God, but there are ghosts.
And that's why you did it.
Yeah, but I got into the comedy and really loved it, and then got into IB with Will O'Wara, who also did CC at BC. He just said, hey, I'm running this thing. And he was always doing different projects. And he kind of wrote.
That's an understatement.
It is definitely an understatement. He's always doing different projects. And he wrote me into this group that he was directing for the show. And the day that we went to go do it, get in the car to go do the show, actually in Davis Square, he calls us. And he's like, everything's canceled. That we had a fight with our landlord, and we don't have the space anymore starting right now, so there's no show, there's no anything. But I might be having this other gig that will be really important, so you know, keep your ears to the ground. If that happens, I'll bring you in. Oh, yeah, sure, Will. It's definitely going to happen. But he got made director of... artistic director of IB, and that he pulled us in, and that was history as of 15 years ago. That
wow.
was 2000, when I was still in college.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was great. Great.
So you've been at IB 15 years. You were previously on the main stage?
Yep.
And you directed the main stage?
Yep, I joined the main stage in, I think, 2004, and I was there for many years, and I took over as director. Was it 2 or 3 years ago?
It was 2 years.
I don't know, whenever it was. And,
before
Anne
was born.
Yeah, it's before Anne, our daughter, was born. She's a year. I loved it. I loved directing. I loved teaching. And I just love it. Probably can't get enough of it. It's, I bring up my atheism a lot, but I don't have a church. And I have the improv community. Like, it just is. They're the people who I lean on. They've been there for me, a dozen times or more. You know.
The Turco is watching our daughter tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Dina.
She's watching our daughter. Hi, Annie. and watching our daughter tonight, so we can go out and and had a bike crash where my bike got destroyed and my.
Is it a bicycle?
My cast. I was dirt poor, trying to make it work as a comedian. My cast gave me $1,000 to team up and just again bought me a bike, which was just amazing. There's awful lot of love.
Yeah, a lot of people brought us food after Amy was born.
Yeah.
Kind of a rough time.
Yeah.
And people were just amazing. Nate Lopez, especially, I think, organized it. Nate, you're great.
Nah.
I love you.
Yeah, I wish I could. I wish I could uncast you from main stage.
So I went through the IA training center, but I took a level one at IB, and ideally I want to go through the whole training center, but it's tough just to get through do everything I want to do.
we call that life. That's how it works.
So I had Nate for level one, and I thought he was really impressive, nice guy.
Yeah, Nate Lopez and I started on Family Show together, and I knew of him. Because Bobby came home one day and was like, I have a crush on this guy at the theater.
A non-sexual crush. Okay. Exciting.
No, it was definitely sexual. It's like, I have a crush on this guy at the theater. He's really awesome. He has 2 kids. He's in the Navy. He's just got a really cool perspective on life. And I was like, all right, well, I'm jealous. Who's this guy? And Nate and I got cast on a family show. And we had a really great group of people on there. Holly Tarnauer, who's also on main stage now. And Dan Chapman, who's in Face Off. And Lauren Robinson, who is still in Family Show in Brit, and it was just a really great crew, and Nate really always kind of felt like the heart of that to me. Like, he feels kind of like a natural captain in a lot of ways. Like, he just brings a lot to the table.
Absolutely.
So how did you guys meet at IB or prior to IB?
No, we met online.
Yeah, Match.com.
Yeah, but it turned out we had a mutual friend from IB, Cameron Esposito, and I worked together, and Cam is now a stand-up, and was just at Johnny Geese.
Yeah, just last night.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, we both separately contacted her right after we had our first date, and I was like, is he, a normal person? And I think she said something like, no, but in an okay way.
Yeah, which is accurate.
Nice. And you have one daughter?
Is yeah.
How have you found, has it changed your perspective on improv at all, having?
I think the only thing that's changed about my perspective on improv is that, you know, when you're in your 20s and you're kidless, you're like, oh man, time is whatever. Like, you know, you just have endless amounts of time. Oh, work's done at 5 and I have the whole rest of everything. And it's a little bit more precious, you know, so you kind of go, I can't spend 6 nights a week at IB like I used to.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I could support every show. I want to be there. I want to see it. I want to see
yeah.
the, I like, I hate when I see somebody on stage and I go, who is that? I don't know that person. Oh, they perform on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
I'm never there on Wednesdays. I wish I were there every Wednesday. I want to
yeah.
see everything. So that's been a thing, you know, kind of paring down that relationship. But I never want to give it up. I never want to let it go. It's not
I feel the same way. It feels much more precious the time that I get at IB. And I really miss performing. I miss performing. Like, it's an ache sometimes when I watch Studio 40. Especially sometimes, for whatever reason, Buscow. Because I see, like, in some of them how I play, and I'm like, oh, I miss it.
They're a great group of guys.
Oh, my God. Buscow is, like, my heart. And I know I listened to Shauna's podcast, and she said something about, like, I think that we got away with being cast many times, and they didn't know. And I just, like, I think they're such a great crew. And what really stands out to me about Buscow more than anything is how incredibly positive they are.
They're amazing,
and they're so supportive, and I love that. And, like, the kind of culture I want to build as a producer for Studio 40 is a positive culture where people like each other, where people promote each other, and, you know, there's no, like, snarkiness.
So important.
Or not, like, bad snarkiness. There's always going to be snark in improv.
No, I'm very polite to strangers, and I'm mean to the people I love. I don't know how that works, but
it's terrible at home.
They're the nicest group of people. Bill Fryer, who's he actually has a show at Comedy Lab on July 1st. Give him a quick plug. I think it's called I Love You, Pikachu. It's about Pokemon.
Sure. Sure. We'll just, you know, we're rounding out the every show possible idea ever. You know, you got to fill in the rest of the cracks. Just like every improv group name has happened.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of which, when we were kicking around, so one of my groups is called Eagle Cum. We were thinking about changing the name.
What is it? Eagle Cum?
Yeah.
I would think about changing the name to anything.
We don't really perform much anymore, so we're just going to leave it. But somebody came up with Wes Anderson. Yes, Anderson, which is a play on Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
But then I just saw somebody else post about a group named
Yes
Anderson.
I mean, there's probably a lot of, like, I know for Disco Basement, there's a disco taxi, there's other disco themed names. I mean, it's just like any improv troupe name is going to be dumb. It's just dumb.
You scrutinize, when you're coming up with it, you scrutinize it over it forever and
ever. Oh, endlessly.
And then.
Stupidly.
It's just, people don't think of the name, they just think of the group,
once
they see you.
We should be Hammer Time!
Yeah.
We should be Eagles.
When my hammer team was coming up with our name, we were the Rack, and. I think Shane Tully did this scene where he was actually on a rack and being, like, tortured. And that's where it came from. But everyone was like, they're going to think it's boobs. They're going to think it's, like, lady parts.
That's what I thought of.
Yeah.
Named your group Eagle Cub, so that's why.
Fair enough. Does Disco Basement still perform?
We have a show in September, and I can't remember the exact date right now, but we don't, I think what really impresses me about groups like Chico and My Dinosaur Life and Buscow and other groups that are out there is that they chase shows, and they really are promoting themselves, and Aeroporto does a lot of shows, Awkward Compliment does a lot of shows. They really impress me, and we had a member like that, and she moved, and we don't chase in the same way. I think we're, and a lot of us also got cast on IB cast, so
it
got
harder
to.
It's harder than everybody does, you know, but
yeah.
A lot of that stuff, you know, the people that chase it, the people that want it in their lives, you know, put it in their lives, no matter what.
There's so much space in the city.
So I have 3 indie shows a month, and if you're ever interested, just let me know. Yeah.
Thank you. That's awesome. I'll let them know. Guys.
Yeah.
We can play.
What about content? Like, do you, now that you have a child, do you do you think differently or censor yourself any, or does it doesn't affect
you?
No,
I don't think so.
No.
It's tough. It's very tough to play improv with a filter.
Yeah, I got hung up on just almost being PC, and I'm not like a un-PC person anyway, but like everything I was about to say, I'm like, is this going to offend anyone? And I'm like scanning the room, like, and then I just didn't say it, or I didn't get out. And I'm like, you know what? And then I just got over that. And
yeah.
You have to. You can't play like that. You only have so much mental capacity. I mean, part of the reason you can improvise is you shut those voices down that say, oh, don't think this, don't say this, that's dumb, oh my God, you know? Because that's like, I would say it's like a computer, you know? Like, you can only have so much CPU usage. And if it's all going to judging what you're doing and worrying about what you're saying, you're not going to actually say or do anything fun or interesting or on point.
And it brings up for me, so Bobby and I taught an improv class together for a little while in Arlington for kids. And one of the first things Bobby always says to kids taking improv is like, poop is hilarious. Farts are hilarious, but not all the time. And you have to get smart about them.
Got to branch out.
Yeah. And I think when you're a beginning improviser, there's a lot of tropes, right, that you hit. Like, oh, I'm getting fired for the first time. We're breaking up. We're getting a divorce. Like,
here's another proposal scene.
Yeah.
Ah.
You see a lot of conflict scenes. You see a lot of the same things over and over again. And like some of that is like offensive stuff, but when you work through it, because it's on your mind, because you're the one going, oh, shit, I can't say that. And then when you work through it, you come at it in a smarter way once you start saying it, I think.
Yeah. And it's also tough, you know, someone who's been doing this for, you know, like 15 years, you start to notice trends and you see things. People who think that they're amazing don't realize, like, oh, this is so hack, you have no idea. You know, like every scene that starts, oh, come into my office. Oh, you know, you've already lost me.
I remember I took a Mick Napier workshop at IA, actually, and he was saying that he wants to see a scene where the suggestion is bowling alley, and it doesn't start with someone bowling.
With a bowling ball.
It's so true. Like, you don't, like, I haven't been doing it nearly as long as you, but I did watch 6 years of improv before I started because I came to so many shows.
When you rely on the audience for inputs, they're not supposed to be clever.
Spatula!
You're going to get spatula. You're going to get whatever the harlot of the
month
is.
What is with pineapple?
Pineapple. It's pineapple and spatula.
Pineapple, spatula.
And
why do people want to see scenes with pineapple so bad?
They like saying it. It's like a word that like, feels good. There's a German word for that that is good mouthfeel. Like when a word has good mouthfeel. I don't know what it is.
It's just, you get a lot of the same suggestions, and it's your job to make a difference. It's your job. You know, when you get banana for the 18th time, don't eat a freaking banana. Do something different with it.
Yeah.
You know, like, you pull your arms down like you're splitting a banana, but be taking off the sweater, you know.
Ned,
branch out.
Do you find it hard with 15 years experience? Like, I think most improvisers don't want to do the same scene. Obviously, you don't want to do the same scene twice, but you know, with having that many scenes behind your belt, is that a phrase?
Under
your belt.
I have a sizable belt, so I'm fine.
You could see Bobby's belt.
bad joke.
With having so many scenes under your belt, like, it's a very similar premise that's going to come up, you know, at some point, I would imagine.
It happens, but then, you know, like, I'm less a fan of premise-based scenes, you know? Like, I think it's not our job to come up with a really great premise. It's our job to actually improvise. Means, like, you have your idea and I have my idea, and we merge them, and we do something that neither one of us was expecting.
Right.
You know, when you start a scene, you know, hey, Jim, come in here. The robot dog that you built is malfunctioning. There's nothing left to freaking explore.
Right.
But if I start a scene with a yo-yo, and then you start a scene angry, and we slowly build it together, it will go somewhere you're not expecting. The gap is giving it that moment of trust. Like, we're going to get somewhere interesting.
Yeah.
We're going to be observant, and we're going to listen to each other.
And
without that, it doesn't work.
I think that's why you see so many conflict scenes. And it was really interesting when we hosted a Studio 40 workshop last session for the teams with Bobby and Nate Lopez. And I remember in one of, I think it was on, we split them up, so half the group was with Nate and half was with Bobby, and then they swapped. And one of the pairs came, and a girl started a scene, and then the guy said something, and she agreed with him. And he froze. Like, he didn't even know what to do with it.
Yeah, he literally had no idea what to do. He's like, on second thought, everything's blowing up. You know,
yeah,
like we have to
find
have a conflict.
Different conflict. And
she's like, oh, that's great.
And it's true. Like, you want to fill that space so badly that you jump to conflict because it's sometimes like, oh, at least it's something. I know I saw Lennon Parham perform in Toronto at the Toronto Improv Festival that we played in, and she leaves space, and she would just sit there. She played a kid at one point, and she just sat there rocking her feet back and forth together, just waiting for her scene partner to find something, and they turned out to be like a babysitter with a demonic child, and it was great, but like, they just let it breathe, and I'm a big fan of seeing something breathe.
It's tough, though, because every second feels like an eternity when you're
mm-hmm.
not saying anything, you know, or I always think the audience is getting upset.
Oh,
that's
such a, we got to get over that, because the audience likes to discover just like you like to explore, you know, like they want to be involved. They want to know, what is he doing? Oh, and they're deciding, you know, like when you're out there doing some kind of mind work, like, oh, he's making pancakes, I can tell. Okay, they love that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
And you gotta give it that kind of time, or it doesn't work.
It's
all the situational based stuff, it's and the conflict, especially conflict based improv, is very much the dark side of the improv force.
Yeah.
It's very, very. It seems very powerful, and it's very quick and easy, but it's ultimately not doing you any favors.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because like I definitely remember at some point in the family show going, something Bobby does with Disco Basement, he's like, okay, you have a show. What's your goal for the show? And so one of my goals for a while was like, I'm only going to agree on stage. I'm only going to be in agreement. And I found such cool things, like where it just like spinning on stage. Me and this guy Dave, who was on Family Show, did a scene where we were just like weird kids, like walking around, like stretching our arms out and stretching our legs out. And it's so weird. And I was like, where the hell is this gonna go? But it was so much more interesting than I hate you, brother, you broke my train, or, you know, whatever it was that could have
been. And it breaks up the rhythm when the audience is seeing, like, you know, even if they're amazing conflict scenes, they're all 5 minutes long, they're all fighting, and you see that for, like, you know, an hour or 70 minutes, they start to see it's diminishing returns.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a note get on house teams a lot is, like, break it up with, if you have two or three conflict scenes in a row, do a peas in the pod scene, you know, do an agreement scene.
It's just, that's just part of doing it for so long, and you just got to keep, you know, start to recognize those rhythms. You go, oh, you know what the audience needs right now? Some energy.
Yeah.
You know what they need now? Some relationship. And
I love peas in a pod scene. Shuffleball Change had one in their audition that just blew us away, and I think it was Rachel Von Ahn. I forget who the other girl was, but it was so funny just watching them find these weird characters together. I don't know, that's my personal bias. I love that kind of stuff. Especially, you know, because I did a show for kids for so long. You want more positivity. You want more agreement in a show like that. But, yeah, it's cool.
So where you guys are now in your improv careers, how do you feel? And, like, what ultimately do you want to do? Or have you done everything you want to do?
I want to be in Ghostbusters 2. That's what I want. I missed that boat. No, I mean, like, you know, whatever. You know, you originally had dreams of wanting to do this, you know, as a profession, and you know,
he
that was still
to move to Chicago with him.
Oh yeah,
we've been together for two months. I was I really like you, and I can't keep investing if you're going to leave for Chicago. And he's like, okay, come with me. And I was like, all right. And then we got engaged a month later, so. Decided to stay to get married.
Just kind of fell off the table.
But you also love Boston.
I love this town. Just love it. Moved here for college, and just I don't think I'm ever going anywhere. It's a great town. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. You know, like I don't know. I don't know what the next frontier is for me, because I like doing this, and it's never going away.
I'd also love to see Boston. Like, and I have to say, like, I'm so impressed by what you do around here. Like, you've done so much for the indie teams.
Oh, thanks.
And the indie scene in Boston. It's really amazing. And just the podcast alone is such a cool idea.
Yes,
but
everyone that gets a chance to do it becomes a fan of it. And you're never going to get that, like, Chicago-based fandom unless you have a lot of people doing it.
Right. And at both of the major theaters, too. I mean, now there's the Riot and there's a bunch of other places, too. But, like, I think what IA does is amazing. And their style is definitely different from what IB does. But the teams and the people that we see audition over at IB from IA have a polish that IB doesn't bring. And IB has a messiness that IA doesn't have. But they're both so critical to building a really cool scene here. And it's really neat. Like, I've loved seeing this indie scene grow in the last couple of years. It's been awesome.
Yeah, I hope it continues to expand. So.
Yeah. Do you want to go somewhere for improv? Or are you kind of Boston?
I don't know what the future holds. Like, my life has changed completely in the last 3 years. Just, so I got into improv when I quit drinking, and like for the majority of my adult life, that's all I did. And I didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I was just trying to survive day to day. And now I'm like applying myself and seeing some level of success, and I'm like, I don't know where it stops, or, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea what's
going on.
Don't
stop yourself. You know, tell us.
That's awesome.
It's a really
it's
great
hard
story.
To do and really awesome.
Oh, thanks. So on that note, do you guys have anything you want to plug coming up? Or?
Well, Bobby's going to be a main stage.
Yeah!
So,
come see me in July.
Yeah, and come see Studio 40. It's awesome. I'm super excited about these teams. And sometime in September, someday, come see Disco Basement.
Yeah, we have a show together.
Oh my god, we do! We have a show that I literally called on the submission form for Improv Boston. I called it date night because I said, Bobby, we need a night out. We need an excuse. And he's like, oh, a date night. And I was like, great. And the premise is that we explore our lives if we didn't get together after our first date. If like, because the end of our first date was so awkward. It was
super awkward.
Was
that's
super
everything
awkward.
That I do. That's my calling.
So he offered to walk me home, and he was like walking his bike along. We get to my place, and he looks at me, and he's holding his bike, and he looks, like, really concerned. And I'm like, what is going on with this guy? And he's like, well, okay, I'll just tell you. So I'm worried, like, if I put my bike down, you'll be like, why is he putting his bike down? But I don't want to just come out and ask if I can kiss you, because that's kind of weird. But now I did, so I guess, like, can I kiss you? And he's just standing there, and I was like, oh, my God. That's
I'm a doofus. I'm a
doofus.
This
yeah.
is not news.
Like, oh, that's cute.
It was adorable. And it's Bobby, and you all can't see Bobby, but he's very cute. And I love him.
You are crazy.
But, yeah, I mean, so basically we're going to explore, like, what paths our lives would have been on if we did not get together at the end of that first date.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Are you going to recreate the bike thing?
Oh, yeah. Maybe
we
cool
should.
Start.
We should.
Yeah.
Just don't put down the bike and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we could play it. We could do it both ways. I could reject you, or you could be, like, too shy to do anything about it.
Oh.
Which doesn't seem like you. He's not very shy.
I love that idea. When is this?
Good question.
It's at Comedy Lab. Probably also September.
Yes.
Oh, I feel terrible. I'm
yeah.
so bad at this.
Oh, we're real good. Your whole job is promoting.
I know.
You name dropped a million people and forgot the one thing we're doing.
It's probably on the Ivy website, improvboston.com.
Oh, yeah, probably.
So I have two cool shows coming up this coming week. Monday is Indie Night at the Middle East. We got eight really good indie teams. Come check that out. It's Monday from 9 to 11, the Middle East at the Corner. And then this is my favorite show I put together. Started it last month. It's called Rhythm and Laughs. It's we get an acoustic musician, singer-songwriter to do five or six of their own songs, and then in between we improvise. We ask them a couple questions about the songs, and then we improvise a montage based on each song. We've had some Well, we had a really talented musician, Kate Brulé, last time, and we have Ben Higginbotham, who's a Ben Folds-esque keyboard player, coming up Saturday the 27th at the Riot. I think that show might be moving to Johnny D's, at least for we'll give it a shot in September. I'd like it to be a monthly thing, and just get like cross-promotion between those artists and improv crowds. And it was just a super fun show, so I'm hoping it catches on.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Thanks.
So thanks for being here, guys.
Oh, it was our pleasure. We loved it.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye.